Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to this hour of the Kids Zone here on the Radio Reading Service. This is Mark Wiesner.
And Jan Wiesner.
And today we take ourselves back into the book that we've been sharing with you, entitled A Single Shard. That's spelled S-H-A-R-D. It's a novel written by Linda Sue Park. It's a Newbery Honor book. But before we get ourselves back into it, Jan's here to give us a little bit of recap of where we left off.
If you remember, Trier is an orphan who has decided to go and work with the potter nearby. And what he's done is that he has noticed other potters and how they work, specifically one named Khan. And Khan had come up with a new way of doing different colors of glazes within his designs that are etched into the pots. And so Trier tells his potter about it after the royal emissary has come through. And his potter did not get, Ming did not get a royal commission. Khan did, even though Ming is a far better potter. So the royal commission person said, you know, if you can come up with something that is worthy of a commission and bring it to us, I will let you be, you know, also a royal commission. Well, this is just unheard of. But Ming turns it down and says, I can't. I can't travel that far. And at this point, Trier tells Ming's wife, he says, I will take it. And she later tells him, from now on, you call me Anjama. And Anjama means auntie. It's a term of great affection, reserved only for older kinswomen, and Trier was kin to no one. And yet Min's wife wished for him to call her Anjama. He did not even know if he could say the words. So he's now got family more than Crane Man.
And so now ready to launch back in. A few days later, Tree Ear crouched under the bridge, watching idly as Crane Man shaved another sliver of wood from the chopstick he was whittling. Without looking up, Crane Man said,
It is too bad that your thoughts are not on a string. If they were, I would have given them a good yank by now to see what I could see.
Tree Ear chewed on the inside of his cheek. He should have known it was a folly to keep a secret from Crane Man, even for a few days.
I will be going on a journey soon,
Tree Ear said. He meant to speak firmly, but his voice sounded loud and coarse instead.
A journey, eh?
Crane Man continued whittling.
It is a good thing for a man to see the world if he can. Where will you go?
2 days before, Min had handed Tree Ear some tools to be cleaned, saying,
The vessels will be finished by midsummer. If you leave then, you will be able to return before the snow.
In this way, Tree Ear learned that Min was sending him Sasongdo. Since that moment, Tree Ear had regretted the rashness of his offer. He had never once left Chilupo since his arrival as a toddler. How could he possibly think of making such a journey? It would take many days over unfamiliar mountains where there might not even be a path to follow, much less a road. He might well lose his way, and who knew what perils awaited him? Robbers, wild animals, rock slides? What had he been thinking? But then, what was he to do? Tell Min he had changed his mind? No. Going to Songdo was hardly possible, but not going was worse.
Min has some work that must be transported for an audience at the royal court.
Crane Man put down his knife, leaned back, crossed his arms.
An audience at the court? Why the riddle talk, my friend? Why do you not say I'm going to the capital, to Songdo?
Tree Ear swallowed. He rose to his feet and walked the few steps to the water's edge, picked up a flat stone and threw it so it skipped across the water. Four times it lit on the surface. How was it that a stone could be so like a bird? Crane Man stood too, skipped a stone on his own. Six touches. Tree Ear shrugged as a little smile stretched his lips. In all the years under the bridge, he had never once defeated Crane Man at this game. Together they watched until the ripples from the stone had melted away.
I am going to Songdo,
Tree Ear said at last, as if testing the words. He looked at his companion pleadingly.
It seems too far away to say it. No, my friend,
Crane Man said.
It is only as far as the next village. A day's walk on your young legs.
Tree Ear frowned, mystified. But before he could speak, Crane Man continued.
Your mind knows that you are going to Songdo, but you must not tell your body. It must think one hill, one valley, one day at a time. In that way, your spirit will not grow weary before you have even begun to walk. One day, one village, that is how you will go, my friend.
Tree Ear watched as Crane Man stirred up the water with his crutch a little. Then he raised the dripping crutch and pointed it to Tree Ear.
Off you go now to bring me some straw. You will need some extra sandals for such a journey, and who is to make them if not I?
Min spent his time on the new set of vases, one or two of which would be selected to be taken to Songdo. In the meantime, the pace had slowed considerably for Tree Ear. So frantically had he worked during the time surrounding the emissary's visits that he was ahead of schedule on all of his tasks. Plenty of wood filled the shed at the kiln site. Balls of clay and bowls of slop awaited Min's needs. Tree Ear found himself idle on occasion, with too much time to think. And think he did, gathering his courage until at last there was enough of it to enable him to stand before Min with a request.
What is it now?
Min asked. Tree Ear had lingered by the house at the end of the day, waiting for Min to look up from the wheel.
Master?
Tree Ear bowed.
It is now more than a year that I have had the honor of working for you. A year? Yes, so.
Tree Ear pulled in the muscles of his stomach to stop their quaking.
I was wondering if the master would be so good, if he thinks my work worthy.
Min snapped.
Ask your question or leave me in peace, boy. If you would one day be teaching me to make a pot.
Tree Ear's words rushed out in a single breath. Min sat motionless for a long moment, long enough for Tree Ear to wonder if perhaps his request had been unclear. At last, Min stood, and Tree Ear raised his head.
Know this, orphaned one,
Min said slowly.
If ever you learn to make a pot, it will not be from me.
Tree Ear could not stop himself.
Why?
He cried out.
Why will you not teach me?
Min picked up the half-formed vessel before him and slammed it back onto the wheel with such force that Tree Ear flinched.
Why?
Min repeated.
I will tell you why.
The potter's voice was low, but shook with the effort of control.
The potter's trade goes from father to son. I had a son once, my son Hungu. He's now gone. It is him I would have taught you.
Tree Ear saw the potter's eyes, fierce with grief and rage. Min choked out the last words.
You are not my son.
Chapter 9.
Tree Ear could hardly breathe on his walk home. Min's words rang in his ears over and over. Orphaned one, father to son, not my son. He realized now what he had never thought to notice before. All the other apprentices were indeed sons of the potters. It's not my fault, Tree Ear wanted to shout. He wanted to run all the way back to Min and scream the words. It's not my fault you lost your son. Not my fault that I'm an orphan. Why must it be father to son? If the pot is made well, does it matter whose son made it? Crane Man hailed him cheerfully from under the bridge with the news that two pairs of sandals were complete. Tree Ear feigned eagerness as he tried them on, but he knew that Crane Man had read his troubled face at once. Crane Man said nothing, only waited. Tree Ear tied the sandals together carefully in pairs. As he hung them up in a safe place under the bridge, he said,
"The potter's trade passes from father to son here in Chulupo. Is it thus everywhere?" "A story tells the answer to that,"
Crane Man replied. He hobbled over to a large rock and sat down. Tree Ear knelt beside him.
"Potters have not always been considered artists, you know. In the long ago days when potters made objects for use and not beauty, it was considered a poor trade indeed. None wished for their sons to have such a lowly life. Year after year, more sons left the trade until at last there was not enough potters to supply the needs of the people. So the king at the time decreed that sons of potters must become potters themselves."
Tree Ear shook his head and even managed a grim smile. Imagine, sons running away from what he wished most to do.
"I do not know if it is still a law,"
Crane Man continued,
"but a well-kept tradition can be stronger than law."
Tree Ear nodded. At least he knew now that it would be useless to leave Chulupo in search of another master. Crane Man stood and leaned on his crutch to stretch out his good leg. He glanced sideways at Tree Ear.
"My friend, the same wind that blows one door shut often blows another open,"
he said. Tree Ear stood too and went to fetch the supper bowl. It sometimes took him a while to figure out Crane Man's riddles, but he preferred puzzling over them to being told what they meant. Work no longer felt the same to Tree Ear. He now realized that he had been working all along toward the goal of being allowed to make a pot. With that hope gone, so went his eagerness to work. More than ever, he wished that he had not been so rash as to offer to take men's vessels to Songdo. He would do it. Not for the old potter, he thought bitterly, but for Anjima. Tree Ear checked the clay at the draining site. Some of the clay balls were drying out too quickly. He dampened the cloths that covered them. Then, using a wooden blade, he scored the surface of the clay in the drainage bed so it would dry faster. How much slower the work went when the joy of it was gone. The clay in the bed was coming along well. It would be ready to form into balls soon. Tree Ear took up a handful of clay from the corner of the bed and kneaded it. Absentmindedly, he began to form a petal shape. After so many attempts at making the petal that was eventually used for the water pot, his hands seemed to work of their own accord, flattening here, pinching there. Tree Ear's hands paused in mid-motion. Slowly, he brought the half-formed petal up to eye level and examined it closely. Modeling, he thought. There was more than one way to make a piece of pottery. Throwing, of course, using the wheel to assist in shaping a symmetrical piece. But the little animals atop the incense burners, the handles of some vessels, the water droppers, they were not thrown. They were molded by hand without any aid from the wheel. For the first time in days, Tree Ear grinned as he crushed the petal back into a fistful of clay. The second door had just blown open. As usual, men's work took far longer than he predicted, and summer was merging with fall before the pieces were ready. A dozen replicas that had been fired in three separate batches, and the last firing yielded a pair of superb vases. Their delicate floral inlay work shone against the perfectly glazed background. Under Min's instruction, Tree Ear built a special jeg to wear on his back. As they worked, Min grumbled about the problem of transporting the vessels, speaking more to himself than to Tree Ear. Anjima came out to the yard with tea. She served them while Min continued his muttering.
"A straw container,"
Anjima suggested.
"Such as those used to perhaps carry rice, only perhaps double thickness, lined with more straw and silk. The vases would be well protected."
Ming sipped his tea, then turned to Treat Ear. Do you know of one who could make such a container? So it was that Crane Man, too, came to work for Min. He and Min agreed on a price for the labor, and Crane Man began to weave the container under the eaves of Min's house.
Treat Ear would be leaving in a few days. The straw container had been completed, sturdy with double walls and an attached lid. It was exactly the size to take the vases and padding tightly packed. Crane Man fussed about with his creation, making invisible adjustments to the straw. Ajma came out to see it. She and Tree Ear exchanged amused glances behind Crane Man's back.
It is finished?
Ajma asked. Crane Man stopped his poking and pinching and bowed to Ajma.
It was an honor to be part of this endeavor.
Crane Man stood aside while Ajma lifted the lid of the container and closed it again, fastening it with a straw bobble and braided loop.
Fine work,
she said, nodding in quiet admiration. Then she turned to Crane Man, her brow furrowed.
Crane Man,
she said,
I have a favor to ask of you.
Crane Man stood up proudly on his one leg.
Nothing that the honorable potter's wife could ask would be too much,
he answered. Ajma bowed in turn. She glanced at Tree Ear and gestured at him with one hand.
This one, I have grown accustomed to his assistance,
she said.
100 little chores he does for me each day. It is a great help to me in my old age.
Now it was Tree Ear's turn to bow, which he did in bafflement. What was in Ajma's mind?
I would be most grateful, Crane Man, if you could come to the house and continue this work while Tree Ear is away,
she said. Then she hung her head a little and wrung her hands as if ashamed.
I could not pay you. I hope that perhaps my thanks in the form of a meal.
Tree Ear felt an enormous wave of relief wash over him, but caught himself in time to show no emotion. It would not do to embarrass Crane Man. It had been his greatest worry, how Crane Man would eat while he was away. Of course, his friend could always go back to rifling rubbish heaps and foraging in the woods, but Tree Ear had felt that it would be like abandoning him for Crane Man to go back to such scavenging. For days now, he had been worrying over the problem, and Ajma had offered the answer unasked.
Your offer of food is kindness itself,
Crane Man said. Tree Ear looked up in alarm. This was the phrase of polite refusal. What was Crane Man doing?
I would be happy to come by from time to time,
he continued. Ajma nodded soberly. Crane Man bent over and picked up his crutch, then bowed in farewell to her.
I will see you back at the bridge, Tree Ear,
he said, and hopped away. Tree Ear watched until Crane Man disappeared beyond the bend in the road, then turned to Ajma, a question in his eyes.
Because he is proud, Tree Ear,
she said.
He does not wish to be fed out of pity.
Tree Ear kicked a small stone at his feet. Why was it that pride and foolishness were so often close companions? Arms crossed and stance defiant, Tree Ear stood under the bridge and began to speak.
I have a journey to make,
he said sternly.
Over a road unknown to me. 1,000 things could go wrong. Do you not think I have enough to worry about?
Crane Man looked up in surprise. Tree Ear had never before spoken to him in such anger.
Are you thinking of me, my friend? Do not worry. I feed myself and you, for that matter, for many years before you worked for men. I can do so again. Do you think me so helpless now? Not you!
Tree Ear shouted, flapping his arms in frustration like a giant bird.
I am not talking of you. It is Min's wife I'm thinking of. She is an old woman now. Would you have her poor back ache from pulling weeds and those long walks into the mountains for mushrooms or berries? She should long ago have earned rest from such tasks. But From her husband, she gets no help at all. He thinks of nothing but his work.
Tree Ear paused, his breath coming in gasps. He inhaled once, deeply, then spoke more quietly.
Would you have me worry about her on my journey, friend? Will you not help her? For in helping her, you would be helping me.
The shock ebbed from Crane Man's eyes. Now the Tree Ear was no longer shouting. He turned to face the river, his back to Tree Ear. Tree Ear watched and waited. Crane Man's bad leg was shaking a little. In a moment, it shook harder. Now Crane Man's whole body was trembling. Tree Ear stepped forward in concern. He had not meant to make his friend cry. Tree Ear touched Crane Man on the shoulder. Crane Man waved one arm at him, still shaking. But he was not crying. He was laughing. The silent laughter he had been suppressing burst out of him, and he laughed so hard that he dropped his crutch. Tree Ear picked it up and stood in silence, first puzzled, then annoyed, when Crane Man's laughter showed no signs of stopping. If there was a joke, he had missed it.
"Aye, my friend,"
Crane Man said at last, and drew in a long breath. A few last chuckles escaped him as he took the crutch from Tree Ear and leaned on it to sit on the ground. He looked up and jabbed the crutch at Tree Ear.
"A fine performance,"
he exclaimed.
"I have never seen better."
Tree Ear's mouth dropped open for an instant, but he recovered quickly.
"What do you mean, performance?"
he demanded.
"You would question my sincerity?" "No, little monkey, that I would never doubt,"
he smiled, obviously still amused.
"If it means so much to you, I will go daily to the House of Men. There, does that satisfy you?"
Tree Ear nodded grudgingly. The matter was settled, for he knew that Crane Man would keep his word. Tree Ear's speech had gained the desired result, although not exactly in the way that he had planned. Two vases, not the ones chosen, were packed in the straw container as a test. They had been stuffed with silk and wrapped in more silk. Rice straw was layered between them and crammed into each pocket of space. Min, Ajima, and Crane Man all watched as Tree Ear picked up the container and hurled it with all the strength to the ground. Then he rolled it over and over and even kicked it a few times. Min rushed forward and unhooked the straw bauble. He groped about inside, then nodded once in satisfaction. The vases were unbroken.
"Unpack it,"
he ordered Tree Ear, then went inside to fetch the two selected vessels. As soon as Min had left the yard, Crane Man stepped forward to examine the container. He, too, was satisfied. The woven straw had sustained no damage. Repacked with his precious cargo, the container was lashed to the jig. A sleeping mat was rolled tightly and tied to the bottom of the frame. On one side hung two pairs of sandals. On the other, a small gourd water dipper and a bag to be filled with rice cakes. The jig was ready. Tree Ear would leave in the morning. Tree Ear and Crane Man skipped stones under the bridge in the twilight. Before the light was gone, Tree Ear reached into his waist pouch and slowly withdrew a small object. He handed it to Crane Man.
"A gift,"
Tree Ear said,
"to remind you of your promise to go daily to the House of Men."
He did not want to say, "to remind you of me." Over the past month or so, Tree Ear had filled his idle time by modeling clay. He kept a small ball in his waist pouch and experimented with it whenever he had the chance. After some time, a shape began to form out of the clay. It was almost as if the clay was speaking to him, telling him what it wished to become. A monkey, similar to a water dropper Min had once made. Smaller than the palm of Tree Ear's hand, The monkey sat with its hands clasped before its round belly, looking content, well-fed. Tree Ear had inlaid two tiny spots for eyes, with and inscribed other details on its face, hands, and fur. During the preparations for the final firing of the kiln, he had secreted the little monkey in a corner and managed to retrieve it afterwards without Min's notice. To Tree Ear's delight, it shared with the other vessels of that firing the fine gray-green glaze. Tree Ear had concluded that molding was not at all the same as throwing a pot on the wheel. Molding lacked the same sense of wonder, and of course no perfect symmetrical vessels could be made without the wheel. There were still times when the vision of the Prunus vase he had once dreamed of making appeared in his mind's eye, as if mocking him. In spite of this, Tree Ear found that he enjoyed the incision work. He had spent hours on the details of the monkey's features, inscribing them with progressively finer points. This, at last, was the same process, whether on a molded figure or a thrown pot. On seeing the monkey after it had been fired, Tree Ear felt a quiet thrill. The monkey was hollow, like all the water droppers Min made, but as Crane Man had no need of such, Tree Ear had not added the water holes. It was simply a little figure, almost like a toy. Crane Man examined the gift closely. He turned it over and around and stroked its smooth finish. He started to speak, but the sound of his voice was rusty and he shook his head instead. He hobbled over to the basket, where he kept his odds and ends, and brought forth a piece of twine. Still silent, he fixed the twine cleverly around the monkey, tied a firm knot, and slipped the loop around his belt. The monkey swung gaily at his waist. At last he spoke.
"I am honored to wear it,"
he said, and bowed.
"The honor is mine,"
Tree Ear responded. Crane Man looked down and played with the monkey in his fingers.
"I have no gift for you beyond words,"
he said.
"I would tell you this, of all the problems you may meet on your journey, it will be people who are the greatest danger. But it will also be people to whom you must turn if ever you are in need of aid. Remember this, my friend, and you will travel well."
Chapter 10.
With a sharp stone, Tree Ear made another mark on the frame of the jug. There were 6 marks, one for each day of his travels so far. It was as Crane Man had predicted, 1 village, 1 day. Every morning Tree Ear had risen, washed in a stream, and eaten one of Anja's rice cakes. He would walk until the sun was directly overhead, then find a shady spot to rest and drink from the gourd. As the sun moved on, so did he. Sometime during the late afternoon or early evening, he would come upon a village and stop for the night. The countryside custom of hospitality to travelers was a great comfort to him. He walked the main street of the village until someone, usually a child, inquired about his health and his journey. Tree Ear would accompany the child home, where the woman of the house always consented to let him sleep under the eaves. Most evenings, a meal was provided as well. Otherwise, Min had given Tree Ear a string of coins to buy food as needed. He kept them in his waist pouch, along with his 2 flint stones and a ball of clay.
"I would think you will return with some of the coins unspent,"
Min had said gruffly on the morning of departure. As he gave Tree Ear the money, Min had placed his hand for a brief moment on Tree Ear's shoulder. The touch so startled Tree Ear that he almost flinched. Min turned away without a word of farewell, but Tree Ear felt that touch on his shoulder for a long time after. Given him a sack of food, not only were there solid rice cakes, the best journey food, but also rice, a packet of gulkum, sweet dried persimmons. Tree Ear's eyes had widened in disbelief when he opened the packet during a break on the first day. He knew what they were, the sticky orange rounds. A kindly monk had given him some gokum one autumn many years ago in celebration of Buddha's birthday. That was the only time he'd ever tasted it. This was even better, with each luscious piece reminding him of Anjuman's care. So smoothly had his journey progressed that Tree Ear had begun to relax a little. No mishap had befallen him or his cargo. The weather had been fine, the days still holding the heat of summer, the nights of a cool relief. He slept with the Jung as a hard, huge pillow, the discomfort almost welcome as a reminder of his duty. Today, though, Tree Ear's trepidation had returned. The walking had been easy so far after he climbed over the mountain nearest Chalapo. The terrain had flattened out into endless rice fields. Now the land began to rise again. The next village was 2 days' walk away. Over a spur of mountain, Tree Ear would be spending this night in the forest.
Once on the mountain path, Tree Ear began to feel more at ease. Though these mountains were unfamiliar to him, the trees were the same as at home, maple, oak, and wild plum, giving way gradually to pines as he climbed higher. Tree Ear occupied his mind by identifying the birds he heard and the plants he saw. At one point he even began to sing a little, but stopped abruptly when he realized he had been chanting Min's throwing song. "Stubborn old man," Tree Ear thought, shaking his head. The first edge of autumn had nudged its way into these woods. The leaves of some of the trees were rimmed in scarlet or gold. The air was fresh and cool as he trudged the shady path, and he began to feel foolish about his worries earlier in the day. He had hoped to come across a hunter's lean-to or even a temple, but no such shelter appeared as the sun began to descend below the treetops. Tree Ear searched for a suitable place to spend the night. At a shallow stream running cheerfully across the path, he drank from his good little gourd. Wiping his hand on his tunic, he stood and looked around. On the other side of the stream, not far from the path, two huge boulders stood. Tree Ear splashed across the stream and examined them. Between them was a little hollow. It was too small to sleep in, but Tree Ear liked the look of the huge rocks. If he settled there for the night, he would feel as though they were standing guard over him. He struggled out of the jig and set about collecting dead wood for a fire. He had nothing to cook, but a fire would cheer him and warm him as the night came on. After clearing a space, he made a circle of stones from the stream. Then he built a little pyramid of twigs, leaning against one another in the center of the circle. At the bottom of the pyramid went a bed of dried pine needles. With a well-practiced motion, Tree Ear struck the two flint stones together. A shower of sparks leapt to the pine needles. It took a few tries before the wisp of smoke curled up to signal the birth of a flame. Tree Ear shook his head in mock disgust. Crane Man nearly always started a fire on the first try. Tree Ear sat leaning against one of the boulders. He put the flint stones back into the pouch, then ate a rice cake from the bag, wrinkling his nose a little at the first bite. He had finished Anjuma's rice cakes the day before, and the gokum was long gone. These cakes had been purchased in the village, and they did not have the same taste or texture. After his meal, Tree Ear took out the ball of clay. He began pinching, kneading, rolling, not making anything yet, just waiting for the clay to whisper an idea. Soon the smooth, curved back of a turtle took shape. Forming its head was more difficult, and Tree Ear bent studiously over the work. After a while, he became aware that he was straining to see the clay by the light of the fire. He looked around. The sun was gone, its light lingering for a few minutes longer. Tree Ear rose and untied the sleeping mat from the jig. He unrolled it between the fire and the boulders and lay down on his stomach, his chin on his hands.
"Two things a man never grows tired of watching,"
he heard Crane Man say in his mind.
"Fire and falling water, always the same, yet always changing."
As the darkness grew, the fire began throwing odd shadows on the tree trunks around him. A sudden snap from the fire startled him, and he felt the uneasiness returning. Time for sleep, he told himself stoutly. He closed his eyes, but only for a moment. The darkness around him felt too big. Watching the fire for a little bit longer would lull him, he decided. It worked. Between the warmth and the steady flickering of the flames, his eyelids grew heavy. Tree Ear suddenly jerked wide awake. He had heard a noise that was not the noise of the fire. It was so slight that it almost wasn't a noise. A whisper of movement, a disturbance in the still night air. He raised himself up on one elbow, listening, searching in the dim light of the newly risen half-moon. Perhaps it was nothing. Then he heard it again. This time there was no doubt. Something was moving through the forest, not far from him. Something light-footed, an animal slipping weightlessly over the leaves. Slowly, slowly, he picked up the jig. He meant to squeeze it into the hollow between the two boulders, but could not do so silently. The branches of the jig scraped against the granite. Tree Ear froze, holding his breath. This would never do. He had to work quickly, or the creature, whatever it was, would be upon him before he knew it. He shoved the jig into the opening, put his back to it, and wiggled in himself. There was not enough room. He crouched, hunched over with his chin on his knees, and waited, his heart nearly bursting through his chest. Would the beast stay away from the fire? It was dying now, not much more than a bed of coals. Tree Ear cursed himself for not having put more wood nearby. The sound was coming closer. He could hear the rustle of leaves clearly off to his left. On the ground before him was a stick. It was only a twig, but Tree Ear reached for it anyway. He stripped the leaves from it and gripped it tightly. Perhaps, he thought wildly, he could blind the beast as it clawed at him, trying to drag him from between the rocks. How long would he have to wait? The moments crawled by. Then, without further warning, the creature came into view. It was a fox. Tree Ear felt his pulse pounding in his throat. His thoughts seemed to be running a desperate race with each other. Against a fox, he was defenseless. The fox would stare at him, looking deep into his eyes, bewitching him until he rose to follow it to its lair. He would never see Crane Man or Anjuma again. The vases would remain hidden between the rocks for eternity. There would be nothing left of him but a pile of gnawed bones. The fox turned its head. For an instant, the firelight gleamed in its eyes.
"Don't look!"
Tree Ear shouted to himself.
"Don't look at its eyes! It's your only chance!"
And he squeezed his eyes shut to block out the fox's evil stare. How long he waited, he did not know. He opened his eyes after what seemed a lifetime. Had he been bewitched despite his efforts? Was he in the fox's lair, conscious for one last moment before a painful, bloody death? Tree Ear blinked to clear his vision. The fox was gone. He was still wedged into the opening between the rocks, his muscles aching with cramp. He dared not move. It was probably just another of the fox's tricks. If he were to emerge from shelter, the fox would be there, waiting for him. No, he would have to remain there, alert for any trap the devilish creature might spring. The sound of crying birds awoke him. For a moment, Tree Ear did not know where he was. He shifted slightly, and a corner of the jig's frame jabbed him rudely in the back. Sunlight streamed gloriously through the trees. It was morning. Could it be? He had fallen asleep. He had slept for who know how long with a fox nearby, and he had survived. Tree Ear laughed out loud, and the sound of his laughter reminded him of his friend.
"We are afraid of the things we do not know, just because we do not know them,"
Tree Ear thought, pleased with himself. He must remember the idea. Crane Man would be interested in discussing it. And he wiggled out of the crevice, grimacing ruefully at the tight knots in what seemed like every one of his muscles. A day's walk beyond the next village lay the city of Puo. Although Tree Ear was determined to go straight to Songdu without delay, Crane Man had counseled him to make one stop at a place called the Rock of the Falling Flowers in Puyo.
"It's an old, old story,"
Crane Man had said, and Tree Ear had settled down on a sleeping mat, wriggling around for the most comfortable position.
"You know that our little land has suffered many invasions,"
Crane Man began.
"The powers that surround us, China, Japan, the Mongols, have never left us in peace for long. This is the story of one such invasion. It was the Tang Chinese this time. All of 500 years ago, Puyo was then the capital of the kingdom, one of the three kingdoms that shared the land. The Tang, allied with the Silla kingdom, swept down from the north and pushed their way into Puyo. Most of the king's army having been called away to fight the war, there were only a handful of personal guards to defend him. The king received warning, but it was too late. As he and all his courtiers fled the palace, the Tang were snapping at their heels. The king and his party were forced to retreat to the very highest point of Puyo, a cliff overlooking the Kum River. There was no escape. Bravely, the king's guards placed themselves a little way down the path between the enemy and their sovereign. They were overrun in moments. All of the king's concubines and ladies-in-waiting crowded around him, determined to protect him to the last. The women knew well that the Tang would not kill them. No, they would be taken prisoner, probably to be tortured. Their terror can hardly be managed.
Crane Man paused and sipped at his tea. Tree Ear was no longer lying down. He had risen to his knees in the excitement of the story.
"Is that all?"
he demanded.
"Patience, monkey, the best is yet to come."
Crane Man stared into the fire for a moment.
"The Tang army charged up the hill. All at once, it was as if all their minds had become one. The women began jumping off the cliff. Every one of them preferred death to becoming a prisoner. Can you see it, my friend? The women jumping one after another from the cliff, their beautiful silk dresses billowing in the air, pink, red, green, blue, indeed like flowers falling."
Tree Air gasped, his eyes round. What courage it must have taken.
"The Tang were victorious that day, but the women's efforts were not in vain, for they have since been an inspiration to all who have need of courage. Their memory will live for 1,000 years, I'm sure of it."
Crane Man reached out with his crutch and poked the dying embers of the fire. Tree Ear saw sparks flare up and fall again, like tiny flowers.
"Go climb the Rock of the Falling Flowers when you reach Puyo, my friend,"
Crane Man had said.
"But remember that leaping into death is not the only way to show true courage."
Now, Puyo lay just ahead. Tree Ear strode eagerly down the road. He would visit the rock, and when he returned home, he would tell Crane Man everything that he had seen. The villages along Tree Ear's route thus far were much like Chalupo. They were not seaside villages, and they were inhabited by farmers rather than potters. But they had the same feel as Chalupo, small thatched houses gathered in clusters along a single main road. The grand home of a government official, set apart from the rest, a temple somewhere nearby, people working hard for a meager living. Everyone had been kind and respectful, going about their business as he went about his. But Puyo, Tree Ear entered the city gates and stopped in mid-step. How crowded it was! People, oxen, carts, jostled one another in the narrow streets. The houses were so close together that Tree Ear wondered how the residents could breathe. Behind him, he heard shouts of impatience as people tried to push past him. He moved on, swept along by the river of traffic. On both sides of the street, shop stalls were open. Their owners shouted, plying their wares. The customers shouted, bargaining for the best prices. Never had Tree Ear seen so many goods displayed or heard so much noise. How could the people possibly hear themselves think? There were stalls that sold food and drink already prepared, and stalls that sold vegetables and fish for cooking at home. One stall sold nothing but sweets. There were bolts of fine silk, trays of gemstones, wooden toys. All manner of household goods could be had, baskets and straw, sleeping mats, and wooden chests, and pottery. Tree Ear stopped abruptly in front of one stall. It was stacked with small mountains of pottery, not Saladin work, but the very dark brown stoneware known as augi for storing food. The augi seller's stall displayed every size of vessel, from tiny sauce dishes to kimchi jars, big enough for a man to stand hidden within. The wares were stacked in tall towers that seemed to tilt precariously. But Tree Ear smiled, knowing they were steadier than they looked. He had learned well how to stack similar-sized vessels into a tower that could touch the sky if need be, and never topple. Tree Ear was just about to move on when he spotted a shelf at the back of the stall. His mouth dropped open in amazement. Just three objects stood on this shelf. Three identical Saladin wine bottles, inlaid with chrysanthemums. The owner noticed Tree Ear's interest. "Boy, tell your master the latest style these bowls are. The design is the favorite of the king himself. I do not dare tell you what I paid for them. Only a customer of impeccable taste could afford such an item. Is your master such one?" Tree Ear did not mean to be rude, but he could not speak. He merely bowed his head to the man and stepped away from the stall, feeling a little dizzy. Kang's designs, already seen and admired and replicated for sale on the streets of Poyo. Tree Ear began to walk faster, shouldering his way through the crowds. The sooner the better for Min's work to reach Songdo.
Chapter 11. The path to the Rock of the Falling Flowers was steep, and Trier leaned forward, sometimes on all fours, as he climbed, just before he reached the top. He stopped by the side of the path and took the jig off his back. He drank from the gourd and poured a little water on his hands to splash on his sweaty face. Thus refreshed, he felt ready to give his full attention to the side of the rock. He walked the last incline, holding the jar awkwardly in front of him, and set it down once he had reached the broad plateau at the top. It was as if he stood alone on top of the world. He gazed around, this way and that, hardly knowing where to look first. Before him, to the north, the cliff fell away sharply to the Kum River, a broad stroke of silver ribbon winding its way through the hills and plains. Behind him was the path he had climbed, the city Poyo below. How small it looked! Trier shaded his eyes from the sun as if to begin to set, wondering if that smudge on the horizon might be the sea. Surely this cliff was high enough to see all the way there. Crane Man's words came to life, the king standing where Trier stood now, surrounded by the palace women, the enemy scrabbling up the path he had just followed. The cries of the women, their terror, and then their sudden act of bravery, their colored dresses like the petals of thousands of flowers.
"You know the story, eh?"
The voice at his side startled Tree Ear. He felt his heart leap and run. He had not heard the man come up the path, but there he stood, poorly dressed and oddly pale, as if he had been ill for a long time or never went outdoors when the sun shone. Tree Ear cleared his throat.
"Greetings, sir. Have you eaten well today?" "Not today. Not for a few days now."
came the implied answer. The man smiled, but Tree Ear did not like his smile. There was something unpleasant behind it. Although he would have preferred to stay at the rock a while longer, he decided to descend rather than remain in unwanted company. He turned and picked up his jug, preparing to hoist it to his back.
"Let me help you with that,"
the man said, moving forward.
"A fine load of rice, indeed."
Tree Ear stepped back, trying to quell his alarm. His cargo was far more precious than rice.
"Your offer is kind, good sir, but I have no need for help."
The man's smile turned into a leer.
"Now, there's a rude boy. My help is no good to you?"
And he reached out with one arm to grab the jig.
Tree Ear jerked it away from him. He stumbled, coming dangerously near the edge of the cliff. The man snarled, menacing, ugly, and advanced a few steps. He seized the side of the straw container with both hands and pulled.
In the last moments, everything had come together in Tree Ear's mind. The man's pallor, his rudeness, his coming upon Tree Ear in such a deserted place. He was one of the dreaded Tokaram, the bandits who hid throughout the countryside and on the outskirts of cities, emerging only to rob weary travelers. Tree Ear held on to the wooden frame of the jig with all his might. The robber pulled and jerked. Crane Man's solid straw work held. At one point, the man released one hand, cursing. The straw had cut into his palm. Tree Ear's hands were toughened by calluses from axe and spade. His arms strengthened by endless work, he gave not a single step of ground to the robber.
"Be careful!"
A scream of warning sounded in Tree Ear's head.
"You are pulling so hard. If he lets go suddenly, you will fall. Move, move now, so your back is not to the cliff edge."
Tree Ear shifted his feet and began edging sideways. Still the robber pulled, now shouting curses and threats with every breath. Soon Tree Ear's back was to the path. His hands and arms felt like iron. They would never break. He would never let go. The robber was weakening. He could feel it. Tree Ear stared into the robber's face. Hatred would give him more strength, and it did, too. Silently, he swore to himself that this dog of a man would never win the jig with its precious contents. The man stared back at him, his face contorted in an evil grin. But suddenly he laughed and released the container. Tree Ear collapsed backwards into the arms of another man who had stolen up the path behind him, a second robber. Against two, Tree Ear could do nothing. The second man pinned his arms back while the first struggled forward and wrenched the jug away. Tree Ear kicked and struggled. His head crashed into the chin of his captor, who swore in pain. The other robber reached out and slapped Tree Ear's face viciously.
"Stop your struggle, worthless one,"
he said.
"We mean only to rob you, but it would not be past us to harm you if you proved too much trouble."
While his companion kept Tree Ear pinioned, the first robber quickly opened the straw container. He threw aside the packing of straw and silk, growing angrier with each handful.
"Not rice? What is it you are carrying, idiot boy?"
At last he drew out the first of the vases, and his vase grew purple with fury.
"Useless!"
he screamed, gripping the mouth of the vase with one hand and waving it about. Tree Ear caught his breath with fear.
"We might sell it,"
said the second robber more calmly.
"Have you no eyes in your head?"
his companion shouted back.
"Look at it. Can't you see? This could only be the gift for the palace. Nobody would dare buy it from us. Keep looking. Perhaps there is something more."
The robber set the first vase down on the ground and returned to his search of the container. With more muttered curses, he pulled out the second vessel and threw a final handful of straw on the ground.
"Nothing!"
he screamed.
"All the way up this hill, and nothing!"
His companion had shifted his grip now, had one arm across Tree Ear's throat, throttling him so he could barely breathe. With his other hand, he pawed roughly at Tree Ear's waist pouch.
"Ah, here's something to cheer you up."
He held the pouch in his free hand and emptied the contents onto the ground. The flint stones and the little clay turtle fell out, followed by the string of coins.
"Something, anyway,"
grumbled the first robber, scooping up the coins. He kicked the jag out of his way and headed down the path.
"Come, we've wasted enough time here."
Tree Ear breathed a silent prayer of thanks.
Take the money, take anything, just leave the vases alone.
The second robber laughed.
Wait,
he said.
Come, hold this donkey for a moment.
The first robber retraced his steps.
What is it?
He asked impatiently, grabbing Tree Ear by the arms from behind.
A little fun, as long as we're up here.
The robber picked up one of the vases. He stepped to the edge of the cliff and flung it into the air, peering over the edge. He put his hand to his ear in a pose of listening. After an agony of silence, the crush of pottery was heard on the rocks far below. The second robber laughed again.
Once more?
He said in a jovial voice.
No!
Tree Ear screamed an inhumane screech of utter desperation. The robber holding him lifted him off his feet and slammed him to the ground, so hard that his breath left him, and Tree Ear could only watch as the second vase sailed through the air. With a yelp like a wounded dog, he put his hands over his ears so he would not hear the crash.
Well, with that activity, we have to bring this hour to a close. It's always a pleasure to be with you each Saturday afternoon. This has been Mark Wiesner.
And Jan Wiesner.
And we wish you a great week ahead.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
So long.